Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sidery. I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter, at eSidery. You can follow Brendan on Twitter, at BrendanClean14. We're joining you on the courts right now, just sitting, hanging out, talking about the picks for the Phoenix Suns. And I think, honestly, Brendan and I were talking about it. They landed DeAndre Ayton, number one overall. And from there, it just was absolute chaos tonight. And they end up somehow with Mikal Bridges, who was rated number 9 overall on my board in a trade-up, using Zaire Smith in the 16th pick, but also the 2020 Miami pick was involved in that, so we'll talk about that later on. But they also picked up a guy I really liked that was some really good value with Elie Okogbo, number 31 overall. So immediate reaction, I'll talk more about this in my column tomorrow, but I think it deserves almost an A draft, honestly, because once you get a franchise center and you get two possible long-term stars in Bridges and Okogbo, that's a home run for Raymond Dunham.
Yeah, it's definitely not the outcome anyone expected, I don't think, especially with so many guys. That's the thing we were talking about when 16 was coming up, is there's so many guys here that could really be game changers for the Suns. It wasn't even, I think at that point, I at least was assuming there wouldn't be a trade, because Zaire Smith, who they obviously technically picked and ended up shipping to Philadelphia, and tons of guys, Jacob Evans, D'Anthony Melton, so many names, Okogbo, who they ended up with, were there. And so I was completely taken off guard, but I agree. I mean, they might have gotten two starters in this draft and good above-average guys, not just, you know, projects that they're going to stick in there because they don't have any other options. I think this was a draft where they got a lot better, and considering that's been the priority all offseason, I think, you know, they're headed in the right direction based on what they want to be doing.
I think, honestly, there was a lot of reports going around. They were going to pick Dante DiVincenzo, but according to Arizona Sports' John Gamadori, they were going to take DiVincenzo at 16, but they got an offer with 30 seconds left on the clock for the rights to Mikal Bridges, but they had to get the 2020 Miami pick. So that is gone. The Phoenix Suns' best draft asset is gone. Their best one, I believe, now is probably their own 2019 first-round pick,
yeah.
Maybe the Milwaukee pick. But what was your reaction to that? Because, honestly, I didn't expect that to be moved, but for a guy like Mikal Bridges, who's an immediate guy who I believe could be a starting shooting guard, who might put Devin Booker in the James Harden position next year, I think it's an absolute steal, even though you really can't – really, Scott Bordeaux, you, me, Kellen Olson, we were all talking in the media room about it. You're really gambling against Miami not being bad in 3 years, but I also can't see how Pat Riley would want to be bad in 3 years.
Yeah, I think that trade sort of dictated two paths for the Suns, which is one, just – that the aggressiveness using that pick to me was kind of surprising. I think I imagined if any pick was going to be moved, I had kind of just been throwing in the Milwaukee pick as the filler there. But the fact that they felt good enough about Mikal Bridges to use that pick signifies that they weren't blowing smoke when they said that they wanted to be aggressive this summer.
Yeah.
That can mean, and I feel like that's kind of been the MO for a few summers, but it really, really was the message from McDonough from the end of the season on. And so using that pick really indicates that they're willing to do that. And I think you're right about Booker too. They haven't really taken a pure point guard, even though it seemed like Aaron Holiday would be the pick at 16 to kind of shore up that spot. Even Okogbo, I mean, he is a guard, but he's going to play one and two. So that idea of playing Booker more on the ball seemed unlikely, but it might actually happen even more next year than it did this year.
I honestly think it's a good idea because we saw Booker's playmaking go way up to about 25% this year. With DeAndre Ayton and now Mikal Bridges, and Dragan Bender is going to be developing more as a stretch four, he's going to have so much space to operate compared to last year. It's really almost uncomparable.
Yeah, were you surprised that neither Bender or Chris ended up moving tonight? I mean, it still could happen in July, but I think that was one of the possibilities tonight. I mean, they didn't really take a replacement for either one of those guys. Maybe that makes it easier to keep both for now, but did that surprise you at all?
Not really, because I didn't really expect players to be moved tonight. I was more expecting just picks overall, like packaging 16-31 and one of the Miami pick or the Milwaukee pick I expected to be moved up. But from my point of view, I just think that, honestly, Chris and Bender, you can keep as projects now, unless you really get blown away with an offer this summer. But I wanted to ask you really quickly, because now we know the odd man out, unless they really believe he is the sixth man, and really a super sixth man, that's TJ Warren, taking back-to-back wings in the draft after you just gave him an extension last summer. What to say about his immediate future here?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're recording this before we go talk to McDonough. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next week about comments we hear and press conferences tomorrow and everything, but it definitely doesn't spell great things for the future of TJ Warren on the Suns. I mean, it's kind of weird to think that not even a year ago they extended him, and now we're already having this conversation. But I think we were talking before the draft, or maybe right after they drafted Bridges, that you know, this season, maybe they just didn't see what they wanted to see. He didn't really improve as a shooter or a defensive player. They went out and got a guy who can do both of those at an elite level compared to the other guys in this class. Probably the best possible pure 3-and-D option in the draft. Kind of answers that question pretty directly as far as, we need this, you're not providing it, there's your replacement. I mean, it might not be that cut and dry, as you mentioned. Warren might have a future as a sixth man, as a scorer, but it's hard to look at Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges and not think, where does Warren fit into this?
Exactly. I think, honestly, from TJ Warren's perspective, you have to be thinking from his point of view. They just took Josh Jackson, who at number 4 in 2017. Now they take Mikal and a trade-up. You have to be thinking to yourself, you're TJ Warren, that what's going on here, obviously, because you just gave me an extension. But like you mentioned there, the extension, they might have been banking on him developing more. Do you think that was a smart move, looking back on it now, by Ryan McDonough, or do you think it was worth it?
I think it's still a reasonable price to pay, considering he is still young. It was only his second contract. It might have been a slight overpay. I think banking on that improvement may be a little bit too much, but we were kind of debating this, like, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that they could at least get equal value back for Warren in the event that they do trade him this summer or at some point over the next season. I think they could probably get second-round picks, maybe another player who is in a difficult situation on another team.
Just fill in the gaps.
Yeah, something that's kind of just a flip, I think, could still happen where they're not having to give up an asset. So if that's still the case, then, you know, it's not really a mistake, but it is a problem that they created for themselves.
I honestly think, if they do want to start Bridges or even start Warren next year, I don't think that's going to happen. But with Bridges, it's just really surprising to me that you could easily place him not only as a starter, but as either a guy next to TJ Warren, who's a perfect fit if he wants to help stretch the floor for him. But you can play 2, 3, even small ball stretch 4 at times, really help space the floor. We were talking about just jokingly that over the past few months that Mikal Bridges is an ideal target for us, but it seems like Ryan McDonough listened to us and he's doing the exact same thing that we were talking about, adding that immediate value guy that brings everything they need as far as shooting, defensive versatility. I think that, honestly, I know they had Zaire Smith at 16 on their board, but were you mad at all that they traded away Zaire? I know I have Zaire rated 8 on my board, Mikal is 9, but I'm banking on, obviously, Zaire being better in 3 years down the line, but that could also be when Mikhail's 25 years old and in his prime.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, you're hitting on what the trade really was about. And it's not normal that we think about the draft in terms of helping a team win the next season. That's not really what you're going to ever expect from a rookie. But in this case, they picked one of the oldest guys in this class. They picked a guy whose skill set can translate really quickly to the NBA. He's really just going to be asked to do almost exactly what he did at Villanova, and that was a title team that he probably was the best player on. So just imagining that easy translation for him, to me, he can be a part of that, even though it's not a free agent veteran that's going to come play 35 minutes. I think you could be talking about him in March or April of next year. I mean, I said this to you when we were sitting there after the immediate aftermath of the pick and just said, like, I think he's going to be a guy where even if he doesn't enter the season as a starter, maybe that is TJ, maybe it's Brandon Knight and Devin Booker are the backcourt and there's, you know, some competition for playing time. He's going to be somebody that I think is really tough to not give more and more playing time to over the course of the season, because I just don't – I can't understand a situation where he doesn't help this team.
We've talked about it plenty of times with the Suns resetting their culture. It seems like Mikal Bridges is that perfect guy. It seems like he's going to be like a no-nonsense type of guy. He's going to be a plus defender, plus shooter right away. Just what do you think from that locker room standpoint? Because they obviously need to reset the culture in some capacity this summer. Do you think getting Mikal is a way to doing that?
Yeah, I think he's a super confident guy. We briefly talked to him 3 or 4 minutes after he was selected here at the arena tonight. He just conference called in. But I mean, getting an older player, somebody who won 2 championships, I don't think that, considering the Suns' interest in Jay Wright as a coaching candidate, that they were connected to all 3 of the Villanova guys in this draft at one point. I mean, they almost took DiVincenzo. They were, I think, heavily considering Brunson at 31. They obviously have set their sights on that organization, that program at Villanova, as one to model themselves after. So, I mean, I think if you're going to pick any, that's the best one. They've won 2 out of 3 championships, and they're bringing in a guy that's going to be probably the focal point of the locker room in a matter of years, it seems like.
Now, we're not really going to discuss much time on DeAndre Ayton because we've been breaking him down all month, but one more point I want to make on Mikal before we go to Elie Okobo, who I think is really a good value at 31 overall. Just what do you think about Mikal long-term next to Devin Booker? Because like I was talking about with you in the media room, I think ideally 3 to 4 years down the line, you could have a small ball lineup of McHale at the two, Jackson at the three, Bender at the four if he develops correctly, Ayton at the five, Booker playing the James Harden role at point guard. That seems almost ideal for what they would want to do.
Yeah, it's definitely closer to the perfect Devin Booker infrastructure than anything they could put on the court last year. I mean, we saw them just desperately. Troy Daniels just got way more minutes than he had any right to because he's the only shooting option, the only player that let the team breathe. So to add Ayton, who's going to do a lot of that, both rolling to the rim and shooting, and then Bridges, who's going to be probably the best rookie shooter, maybe Kevin Herter, players like that, but he'll be up there for sure. That's killing a lot of birds with a couple stones, you know what I mean? So, it's good value in its own right, and I think, yeah, Ayton was a lock, but even then, you know, looking at kind of what they were able to do with the rest of the draft, he makes a little bit more sense. I think the fact they were able to get two wing players, two scorers with their second picks makes that Ayton pick, I think, a little bit more manageable.
Since you brought up DeAndre Ayton, I might as well ask, what does Mikal Bridges do for DeAndre Ayton? Because all of a sudden now they have, like I mentioned, a lineup where DeAndre Ayton's going to have so much open space, not only just for Devin Booker himself, but DeAndre Ayton's going to have, if all these guys develop correctly shooting, he's going to have so much open space down low.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about, too, on the defensive side of the ball, like, one of the things I think we talked about even with Chris Stone last week, talking about, well, Ayton's sort of locked in, what does the team need to look like to optimize his value and make him the most successful in Phoenix that he can be? And one of the things we talked about is switching. So if that's Ayton's best path or one of his best paths to being an above average defensive player, then surrounding him with guys like Bender, Bridges, Jackson, even Booker makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, I think that they got a lot more versatile. Bridges is crazy long, crazy quick and mobile for somebody his size. So I think if they're looking to build a team that way, like we talked about on offense, same thing applies on defense. That versatility is going to be even more valuable, and I think it'll help to make Ayton's life a lot easier.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think this would happen with Mikal, but we were joking about all the last few months. But if you add Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson on the perimeter now, if you get a plus defender at point guard, maybe Elie Okobo develops into that long term, but all of a sudden, you have backup for Devin Booker, not only him, but also DeAndre Ayton defensively, where they could easily just lock down the perimeter for whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bender's still a big piece there where you have to hope that he gets there too. But, I mean, I think he's shown enough signs, especially on defense as a switching defender, that you can project that that should happen. And even then, to have that perimeter defense, that's a luxury a lot of teams don't have. So, I mean, and to kind of switch to Okobo, he fits that as well. It's really tough because he's so raw. He kind of just burst onto the scene like the last 2 or 3 months. It wasn't even somebody really people were talking about. And so it's tough to know what he'll be, but he certainly looks like the type of player that they're targeting at this point.
Really, honestly, I've seen many James Harden comparisons thrown his way. Just what do you think about Okobo's ceiling? Because right away, I think he's raw. He's probably not going to play much at all his rookie year, I imagine, unless they decline Tyrese's option, which I think is honestly going to happen at this point. Their deadline, I believe, is Sunday at midnight. So if they took Okobo at 31, it probably means likely that that's going to happen with Tyrese. But what do you think about Okobo's immediate future in Phoenix? Because he's kind of like Ayton. He's set up well to develop well, but do you think Brandon Knight's the ideal guy to develop behind?
Yeah, I think he's – I mean, he is probably not ceiling, but if he turns into what Brandon Knight was supposed to be and maybe still could be, two-way player, somebody who's going to shoot, handle and pass pretty well, but like a kind of ideal combo guard who's going to hustle on defense, like I guess Knight was in Milwaukee, really. That, I mean, that's kind of perfect next to Devin Booker. So to lock that kind of guy in at a young age, somebody who can develop, I mean, his immediate future, probably...
NAZ.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's somebody who really we should be watching at Summer League to see kind of how he hits the ground running. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's not going to be on a two-way deal, probably, but he could definitely spend some time down there like Bender did as a rookie and, you know, maybe get that Bender, Davon Reed treatment where we really don't see him until February, March, April. But for him, I don't think that's too big of a problem. I really think that he's going to have a lot to get acclimated to, and to rush him along would be a problem. I think, you know, even if he had stayed overseas, that wouldn't have been a bad thing. But if he does come over, I think his development will be the priority rather than getting him on the court and, well, let's see what he can do.
I know we're actually recording this, like Brendan mentioned, at the top of the podcast before the pick of 59, also before we talk to Ryan McDonough. So 59's coming up pretty soon, so we're going to wrap up pretty soon as well. But just your overall thoughts on Okobo before we just dive into the regular thing. What do you think about Okobo himself long-term in Phoenix? Because I know you mentioned there that he could grow into the point guard of the future, but how do you see him defensively? Because that's his main concern. Because honestly, he's a microwave scorer, though, which is exactly what they need off the bench there.
Yeah, I mean, just for people who maybe aren't familiar, too, I think we talked about him when he came in for a workout, but he scored when he really burst onto the scene, like I mentioned. Yeah, 44 points in the playoffs. In the French League, which isn't one of the top leagues overseas from everything that I've heard, but at the same time, that type of potential is crazy. And when Pat Connolly talked about him at the workout, even he said, you know, can't argue with that type of production, and he has an NBA body. He'll need to learn how to pass. And even Okobo said that at the workout. He said, every scout I've talked to has been asking me, show me you're a point guard. And so he'll have to answer that question. He'll have to show that his body, he can actually play defense rather than just having long arms and looking like a defensive player. But like you said, I mean, it's going to be a future thing. Brandon Knight's under contract for two more years. They have a lot of guards on the roster. Devin Booker's going to need to play point guard. Troy Daniels is still here. So they don't need him to come onto the court and produce. And I think that's a luxury that he might not have had in other situations. So hopefully Phoenix can make a development plan for him that works in his favor, and he can become a really good value at 31, because he was somebody mocked as high as 21 at Utah,
even 16 in some mocks.
Yeah, exactly. So to get him at 31 when he was expected to be long gone, I think that's the real story of the pick for them. No matter what happens, to get that kind of guy in the second round is tremendous, and it bumped up my overall grade for them by quite a bit.
Absolutely. I guess since you just mentioned your grades, before we wrap up today's podcast, what's your overall grade for the Suns? Because beforehand, I thought Ayton was going to knock it down just a little bit, because we all know I have Luka number one on my board. But if you go Ayton, but then you also cover up for his defensive deficiencies by going with Mikal Bridges, trading for him, even though the 2020 Miami pick's a little bit rich for some people's blood, I think it's ideal for what they're trying to do win now. Sort of options. So what do you think overall for the grade? Because I'm going to go A-, because I think Mikal is just an immediate impact guy. And Elie Okobo has such high upside to me that I feel like he could easily develop into starting point guard.
Yeah, I think I'd go B+, so pretty much the same range as you. I think that 2021 Miami pick, the way I've been thinking about it is similar to the Brandon Knight trade. We traded the Lakers pick we got in the Steve Nash deal and kind of got crushed for it, the Suns did, and it was impossible to know where that would end up, and it's changed hands twice since then. It was with the Celtics and then went to the Sixers, and so it's like, how do you really gauge a pick 3 years from now and try to factor that in? I mean, Kevin Pelton did a quick grade on it that made some sense. He has a way of valuing that kind of thing.
He gave us the D, by the way.
Yeah, gave us a D, and he said that would really typically equate to what the value difference would be. Something like the 36th pick is what we should have given up. So obviously the 2021 Miami first can't be the 36th pick. So we're sacrificing some value, but I think it goes back to what I said when we were talking about the trade in the beginning, is for the priorities this team had and their need, in a way, to compete next season, at least put together a product that looks finished. I think it fit their priorities, even if they did sacrifice some value. And like you said, with Ayton in place, Bridges did make a ton more sense. So I think, yeah, B+, but especially if Okobo reaches his ceiling, that would just shoot up for me.
Honestly, they're all the workers around us are tearing stuff around. The draft party is over. Everyone's out of here. We're waiting on pick 59. I think they're on 58 right now. So we're going to head back in for the final pick of the draft for the Suns and then talk to Ryan McDonough. But appreciate you guys listening in. All of a sudden, the Suns have added not only DeAndre Ayton, but a top 10 talent, Mikal Bridges, and a top 20 talent on my board, and Elie Okobo. So I think the Suns are one of the big winners in this draft, even though they get the 2021 Miami pick. But once again, appreciate you guys listening on today's podcast. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow with a special guest, Cole.